Monday, November 15th, 2021. Welcome to the Stu Peters Show. My name is Stu Peters. Well, by now, anybody who puts America first, anybody who embraces the exceptionalism that is America, has no doubt heard it all from the wretches and parasites who hate this country. If you embrace the America First ideology, there's no doubt you've been labeled a racist, a fascist, a Nazi, a white supremacist. It never stops. And nobody is ever held to account for these lies because the same press outlets all copy each other. The Mockingbird Media. There's supposed to be a handful of exceptions from the Mockingbird Media out there that form a dissident alternative media. The strongest, based on viewership alone, is supposed to be Fox News. But that's a lie. Most of the employees at the Fox News channel are still liberal themselves. And even more importantly, that channel still takes its moral cues from the radical communist left and global anti-freedom cabal. There's proof of that. It's why they're bending a knee to their big pharma masters and obeying by imposing a tyrannical vaccine mandate on all of their employees. It's why they still force people like Chris Wallace on us. It's why they're still happy to smear conservatives, even their own viewers, as racist bigots. Over the weekend, there was a big anti-forced vaccination protest in New York City outside the Gracie Mansion where the mayor lives. It brought a lot of people together, notably, most importantly, people who normally might not be political allies. One of the groups in attendance was the Groypers. The Groypers are a young America First group, a group of Christian American nationalist patriots with strong conservative beliefs. A group you may be well aware of if you're familiar with Nick Fuentes, who hosts America First, a popular commentary show found on Cozy TV. Fox News is frightened, terrified of the Groypers, as they're frightened of any conservative or America First movement that isn't completely neutered and under their firm control. And when Fox is frightened of something, they have no problems using the same lies that CNN or MSNBC use. So in their write-up of this protest, Fox said that a bunch of white nationalists attended, referring to Fuentes and his followers and anti-vaxxers and pro-freedom advocates. And to back up that claim, Fox cited the Anti-Defamation League, a radical left-wing advocacy group that simply poses as an anti-hate organization. And of course, while Fox was calling these Groypers white nationalists, based on the word of the ADL, they were posting photos of them too. So this is naturally an extremely dangerous effort, among other things, to have these Groypers doxed as white nationalists so they can be targeted for attack, so they could be fired from their jobs, kicked out of their school, or what have you. Well, our next guest was in that group of Groypers. She's running for office in Maryland, but she traveled all the way to New York to demonstrate for freedom against communist tyranny. She doesn't think she's a white nationalist, and we believe her. You know why? Because she's black. And she wasn't the only one. The Daily Mail is based all the way in the UK, but for some reason felt the need to write up this same protest with lots of photos of Fuentes and his Groypers. And from their photos, it's clear, at least to me, that the America Firsters hailed from all of America's races. Now, after getting called out online, Fox tried to backtrack. They changed their headline, and we're glad that they did, but at the same time, nobody's fooled. They took it down because they were getting blasted, and if they hadn't been called out, it would still be there right now. That's Fox's MO. They want to keep blacks on the Democratic plantation just as much as CNN and the Democratic Party itself. If a black American thinks, for him or herself, they're happy to use the same rhetoric as the left. They're happy to accuse them of being a racist or white nationalist and other absurdities. Shekinah Hollingsworth is that Maryland candidate for public office that we just mentioned. She's the black white supremacist, in Fox's words, and she joins us now. Shekinah, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, Stu. Yeah, I mean, at this point, Fox News has really become just another arm of like CNN or MSNBC. They're trying to appeal to a woke mob that frankly is never going to support them. And I find it pretty ridiculous how they would smear a bunch of young conservatives to be white nationalists. It absolutely doesn't make any sense. And they're cherry picking the images that they use to promote that kind of a narrative, because I wasn't the only Black person there. There was plenty of Groypers there of different races. And what brings us together is that we love this country. We don't want to be forced to be vaccinated. And we're standing up against the globalist system that is allowing all of this tyranny to go on. So if that makes me a white nationalist, then I guess I'm a white nationalist to Fox News. It's pretty sad to see.
What do you think is the big picture here?
Well, I think they want to try and appeal to a broader broader audience. I think Fox News has largely given up on anything conservative, which is why movements like America First are needed, which is why we need more America First candidates in office to promote actual conservatism. The Fox News network doesn't think that conservatism is palatable anymore, and they want to try and appeal to this broad spectrum of people. But there is more of a majority of America First conservatives than not. People are craving people like us to fight for them, and we're glad to take up that mantle.
Fox News is participating in identity politics first.
Absolutely.
And the country second. That's why you are a Black conservative or a gay conservative before right. You are just an America First patriot who loves God and loves this country. Why do you think it is that Fox is willing to bend the knee to communism?
Well, Fox has a large network of donors that are globalists in nature. And in order for them to keep running their propaganda machines, and they have to keep appealing to globalists, they have to keep appealing to people who are inherently anti-American, who are anti-nationalist. And at the end of the day, they are serving their corporate interests first. It's not really about the country. It's not about uniting people under common causes. It's about protecting their bottom line. And that's very evident with the way that they choose to cover people like Nick Fuentes and the America First movement.
Or not cover them because they don't have the balls to do right. It, quite frankly. There's no exactly. strength there whatsoever. And that is depicted very clearly by its leadership. I mean, Paul Ryan is one of the weakest slithering snakes, I think, on the face of the planet, or at least in this country right now. And he's on the board over there. They're taking direction from the likes of Paul Ryan, who have no problem selling out, which is obvious. He was a public servant for many years and walked away from that a multimillionaire somehow, some way, I'm assuming by selling out the best interests of American constituents for his own enrichment and empowerment. And that's typical of what's happening with a lot of these establishment hacks that truly do hate our country and view America Firsters like yourself with nothing but contempt. Is that an overstatement?
No, that's 100% correct. You know, at the rallies I went to, we had them both at outside the Pfizer facility and at Gracie Mansion. And the overall theme is that the America Firsters are representative of regular American people. We're cops, we're teachers. And all of these tyrannical mandates and the identity politics, that's affecting real people on the ground, and they have no one to fight for them. For years, blue-collar Americans have been relying on people like Paul Ryan to do their job and to protect them from the ills of the globalist world that we currently see ourselves in. And not only are these people unable to do that, but they're not willing because they have contempt for regular people. You know, critical race theory is a problem in this country. Nobody should be made to feel like they're a burden because of their skin color, white people and everybody else. And Fox News has helped fuel this narrative that whites should feel guilt for something or other. And that's why they want to attach arbitrary monikers to people that express nationalist views. So that's 100% correct.
How dangerous is it that with the size of Fox's platform and the unsuspecting viewership that they have, who are really victimized and have been sodomized, really, intellectually by this decades-long propaganda brainwashing operation that Fox is a part of, how dangerous is it that they're able to get away with normalizing this kind of rhetoric?
It's extremely dangerous because Fox News also has the donations and the backing of big tech. They're very much benefiting from the big tech censorship of people like Nick Fuentes and the rest of us in the America First movement. So it's extremely dangerous the reach they have. But it goes to show that it's important for us to still keep showing up, to still keep being vocal, because we are a growing majority that just can't be ignored. There are a few on the Fox News network, like Tucker Carlson, who has taken more nationalist stances, and we are very appreciative of that. But the broader network is extremely dangerous to nationalism, to the America First movement. But as long as we keep being persistent and show that we aren't scared of what they have, then this movement is going to go a lot farther than they anticipate.
And we appreciate Tucker's bravery as well. And people who tune in specifically for that program are then subjected to 4.5 or 5 minute long commercial breaks, pushing you towards this bioweapon being called a vaccine, being told to take your second or third or fourth or fifth booster and sign up for your lifetime subscription to become a pincushion for Big Pharma, which is who Fox News is bending over for and taking it directly up the ass as butt sluts for these Big Pharma shills. That's what they have become. I mean, this is why Hannity has become a vaccine salesperson. Yes. And all of the other people are touting their Band-Aids and, oh, we got inoculated and we're safe now. It's all propaganda. It's all a really big lie. And to me, that appears to be very, very dangerous for people who are unsuspecting and don't realize what's really happening at that Paul Ryan establishment. We appreciate you speaking out and for your bravery. We appreciate your fight for this country. And we appreciate you being here. Shekinah Hollingsworth, thank you.
Thank you, Stu.
All right, the Stu Peters Show being a thing, being kept on the air for as long as it has, can be credited in large part to the great sponsors over at steponsocks.com. Make sure that you get over there and check out their high-quality, all-cotton, Patriot-designed socks. These socks give you a sense of satisfaction. The original globalist sock that you can step on these snakes. My favorite is the Trust in God sock, the newly introduced Save Our Kids sock. By the way, the Trader Joe version, now back in stock. Get over to steponsocks.com, check out their socks. But not only do they have socks, silver available at steponsocks.com. Flags, Second Amendment flags, the Trump One flag, or the beautiful new revealing of the cross flag. Go check it out for yourself. Steponsocks.com. Make sure that you mention Stu Peters when you go to steponsocks.com. Well, Kyle Rittenhouse's trial has been going on for 2 weeks, and it's obvious to everyone watching that this entire case is a travesty, and Kyle should have never been brought to trial. Barring a completely inept jury, he'll be acquitted. But sadly, in today's America, a competent jury isn't something that you can take for granted. We already learned that earlier this year in the Derek Chauvin trial. Now, Chauvin was put on trial for using a restraining tactic that he was taught by the Minneapolis Police Department, and it was a non-lethal tactic. The Israelis use it on Palestinians all the time. You'll never see the typical member of Congress complain about that. The autopsy is explicit. George Floyd didn't die of suffocation. He didn't die from trauma on his neck. He died because his heart stopped with a lethal amount of fentanyl in his system. Derek Chauvin didn't inject that fentanyl into Floyd. Floyd injected it into himself, the final self-destructive act of a sad, self-destructive life. But the rest of America paid the price, $12 billion in damage over a 3-month period just last summer. Derek Chauvin paid most of all. In any sane country or in any sane era, Chauvin wouldn't have been put on trial. And if he was, he wouldn't have been convicted. But instead, Chauvin was turned into a scapegoat for the communists. He was destroyed by a country that has decided to blame police for crime instead of the criminals who commit it. And as you know, Chauvin was convicted last spring and sentenced to a staggering 22 and a half years in jail. But he's still fighting for his freedom via appeal on the sensible grounds that his trial was rigged from the very beginning. Bill Mormon is an attorney. He's managing Chauvin's appeal, and he joins us now. Bill, thank you so much for coming. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Stu, for having me on.
I think that I can confidently say that I'm asking on behalf of the entire viewing audience, probably all of America, and I'm certain that we can all say we know the answer. But from your perspective, what the hell happened there in that trial?
Well, obviously, after George Floyd died on Memorial Day, there was about 6 days of rioting in the Twin Cities because of the release of that video. of Derek Chauvin on top of George Floyd when they were attempting to arrest him. And obviously the political pressure to bring charges was great. The other problem with the video, one of the things, I was not trial counsel. I took this appeal, quite frankly, because there was no other lawyer that was going to be representing Derek. Derek's application to have a public defender, which it's my understanding from criminal defense lawyers in Minnesota, is virtually never turned down for someone who's sentenced as long as Derek has been to prison, because obviously he can't earn a living any longer. There was nobody that was going to represent him. And that bothered me. Let me just put it that way. I don't care who you are. You're entitled to have a criminal defense. And there were numerous problems that we'll get into on this interview with the trial, certainly numerous issues that need to be raised before an appellate court. But after the video was released, everybody assumed, when you talk to anybody in the Twin Cities community, everybody assumed that the reason George Floyd died is Derek Chauvin had his knee on George Floyd's neck and constricted George Floyd's trachea from getting air into his lungs. Something everybody understands. I mean, the protests talked about, you know, get your knee off my neck and, you know, don't choke us. And at trial, and one of the interesting things I thought at trial was an opening statement the prosecution talked about Derek Chauvin having a knee on George Floyd's neck. But at closing, because of the testimony at trial, Derek Chauvin's knee wasn't on George Floyd's neck. It's on his back. George Floyd's airway was not constricted. The theory of the defense is that because of Derek Chauvin's weight, and by the way, Derek Chauvin weighs about 145 pounds. Because of that weight, George Floyd's lungs were not able to expand sufficiently to get air in. That's a theory called positional asphyxia. It's been substantially criticized in the academic literature. So one of the issues we're going to take up on appeal is whether there really was sufficient evidence to show that George Floyd died of any kind of positional asphyxia, as opposed to dying from, as you described it, three to four times. The lethal dose of fentanyl in the system, coupled with having a coronary and artery condition where George Floyd shouldn't have been sweeping a sidewalk, much less shoveling in Minnesota, because of the stress that would put on his system. And as you said, he died of a heart attack.
So the conviction here was obviously a politically motivated, rigged trial. I mean, that's the way that I see it. Is that an overstatement? Is that hyperbolic?
Well, I'm his lawyer and I'm representing him on the appellate courts, and I'm not going to get that far in any kind of rhetoric. Certainly, there were massive procedural problems with the trial. Just the fact the trial was conducted in Minneapolis was a problem. I'm sure, as your viewers will know, if there is such pretrial publicity that all the jurors in the community, A, know about the case, and B, have a stake in the case. I mean, just think about this. Everybody in this town knew that if Derek Chauvin was found not guilty, there likely would have been riots in the city again. All the jurors come from the community where those riots would have occurred, and they knew that. This is why criminal trials are moved to different venues outside the community where the crime happened, so that you assure the criminal defendant of an impartial jury, where the jury is not going to be a stakeholder. This trial could have been moved to Duluth, Moorhead, Marshall, Minnesota, well outside the metro area, where every juror in if the trial was tried in those communities would have known that, you know, if we decide guilty or not guilty, there's not going to be riots in our towns. The jurors were not sequestered during the trial, which is kind of shocking, because this was the trial of the century. It was on the news every day, nationally and locally. It was even more ramped up. In those situations, typically the courts will sequester the jury to keep them from hearing things. I don't know this for a fact right now because we haven't obtained the transcript of the trial yet. That's still being typed up by the court reporters. But my understanding is the jurors had to go to a secret location every morning and then were escorted into the courthouse with a police caravan. Now, why was that happening? Obviously, because of concerns for the jurors' safety. Do you want people trying a case as jurors where they have to be concerned about their own safety at even coming into the courthouse based ultimately on the decision they're going to make? In addition to those two issues, the state, the prosecution committed numerous errors during the trial. First, you had, if you recall, the settlement, the $27 million settlement with George Floyd's family was announced while the trial was going on. And the Judge Cahill himself severely criticized the prosecution for that, which is fine. But at the end of the day, the fact that he criticized the prosecution, but didn't give the Derek Chauvin, his attorney, the remedy they wanted, which was a mistrial. In the end, it doesn't matter. The damage was done. The jurors heard about the settlement. In fact, one of the, I think there was a couple of jurors, this was in the middle of jury voir dire, had heard about the settlement and they were kicked off the jury, which is kind of interesting because I think after they go through the voir dire process, or judge instructs them, you're not supposed to listen to any more of the news. Apparently they did anyway. There were problems in the closing argument with the manner in which the prosecution argued the case to the jury. They basically didn't use the proper standard of proof. They criticized Derek Chauvin's defense, constantly calling it a story. The obligations on a prosecutor are different than every other lawyer in a jury trial. You can't do that as a prosecutor. You can't belittle the defense. You can't call their arguments just a story or some half-brained scheme or something. It's prosecutorial error. And there's Minnesota Supreme Court case law. It's clear prosecutorial error.
So for the viewing audience that wants to know how this logistically works, how do all of the aforementioned things that railroaded your client get overcome in a new setting? Is this going to be in front of a jury? Is this in front of a different judge? Where specifically does this take place? All of those types of deals.
Are you talking about the appeal?
Yeah, the appeal.
The appeal will be heard by three judges on the Minnesota Court of Appeals. So we'll be appointed a three-judge panel. We don't know who those judges are yet. We won't find out until prior to oral argument. So basically the process right now is we have to do an extensive review of virtually everything that happened during the trial and all the pretrial materials that were submitted to the court. We will then file a brief with the Court of Appeals. Prosecution will file a response brief. We'll file a reply to their response. And there'll be an oral argument scheduled sometime in 2022. Those three judges will then decide whether or not to grant the relief we're seeking, which is number one, just an outright reversal of the conviction with prejudice, so Derek Chauvin would not be retried, or at a minimum, that there be a new trial, and hopefully that new trial takes place well outside the Minneapolis-St. Paul metro area. If relief's denied by the Court of Appeals, we will appeal to the Minnesota Supreme Court, and if the Minnesota Supreme Court doesn't grant us relief, we're gonna go to the U.S. Supreme Court. Which generally usually hear lawyers talk like that. We're going to go to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court doesn't take a lot of cases. They take about 1% of the cases that are petitioned before that court every year. I think that if the Minnesota appellate courts do not grant the relief here, I think there's a strong likelihood the U.S. Supreme Court could take this case just because of the atmosphere outside the courthouse during the trial and the pervasive pretrial publicity in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. And I can tell by your questioning from what you've indicated your viewers have shared with you, and I know people have told me, people just don't think Derek Chauvin got a fair trial in Minneapolis-St. Paul. regardless of whether you think he's guilty or not.
People who objectively watched the video, people who watched the physical evidence that was submitted, people who looked at the publicly discoverable photographs, not only do we feel like Derek Chauvin, me personally, didn't get a fair trial, he just didn't murder George Floyd. He's not responsible for the death of George Floyd. I mean, so the evidence is there. It's right in front of everybody for the world to see that this was a subjective conviction, that this was a conviction based on fear, that this was a politically motivated conviction. And that's what I feel like. That's what my opinion is. And I think that that's widely accepted amongst Americans that are independently and critically thinking.
There are certainly a lot of people that feel that way, that based on the medical evidence that Derek Chauvin did. Derek Chauvin's actions that evening did not mechanically, medically cause George Floyd to die. And if you don't cause somebody's death, you can't be charged with a homicide. I mean, that's just simple logic. Beyond that, however, you would hope all Americans agree that everybody's entitled to a fair trial, that that's just a bedrock foundational principle of our republic. It certainly was when I was growing up.
And that is not a partisan issue. That doesn't
shouldn't be.
It should not. There's a lot of things here that have become partisan and divisive that really should not be, just based on the Constitution, which I have oftentimes, specifically recently said, has been a shining light on the entire world, a document that has meant change for this world and protection for many people that don't even live here for the last 200 or so years. We're going to be praying for you on this appeal and keeping up with you throughout this process. We hope to have you back for some updates as this thing gets closer. Bill Mormon, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Stu. Take care.
Well, a year ago, some of us were naive enough to think that over time, people would get tired of COVID, that they would get used to it, that they would let life go back to normal. How wrong we were. It's clear that for at least half of the country, the more time that passes, the more outrageous and demented they become. We've known from the very beginning that COVID-19 has virtually no effect on children. They're borderline immune. If a child is healthy enough to attend school, they're effectively at zero risk from the disease. And despite knowing all of this, school teachers are determined to torture children and make their lives an absolute hell. This is not some far right-wing radical conspiracy theory. They force them to wear masks all day. They bully and terrorize them if they don't comply. They make them sit in sterilized desk pods or eat lunch without speaking or whatever new torment sounds like a good idea. Here's a news story from Valley, Washington. At 8:45 a.m., the students at Valley School were assembled for daily COVID symptom check. If any child showed cold-like symptoms, and remember, it's far more likely that they have a cold than COVID, they were sent off to the nurse's office with a note. Once they arrived there, the schools were then escorted to a hallway behind the school gym. They were then locked inside of this hallway. It had automatic locking doors. It required a key card to open. There were no chairs available, and we're told that at certain points, even the bathroom doors were locked. And that's where they were left. At least six children were locked in there with no bathroom access, no food, no water, since the fountains in the hallway were broken or turned off due to COVID safety protocol. They were left like this apparently for 2 hours or more. All of this evil, all of this torture for a disease that none of these children are at any risk from. And you just know that if they can get away with it, teachers will be doing this to children forever, for every disease that they can. Because cold-like symptoms are never, ever going away. Roxanne Hill is the parent of one of the children that was tortured by Valley School staff, and she joins us now. Thank you for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Stu.
So take us through this. I mean, what conditions did you find that your child, among others, were subjected to?
They were locked into a small room that's actually a hallway. They had no way to go to the bathroom. They had no chairs to sit in. They were left to sit on the floor in a very small, confined space. My daughter was not in there for a very long period of time, but the fact that she was in that room was hidden from me when I said that I was coming to get her, and they snuck her out of the room out to the main lobby for me to pick her up. She was already sweaty. Her hair was all drenched in sweat. And she, and with the limited time that she was in there, some of these children were in there for 2 to 4 hours beyond the period of time that she was in there.
What position is the school? I mean, you had to be irate, absolutely furious when you found this out. What's the school's response?
The school has been, in particular, the superintendent has put out statements that the children were not found to be locked in, that police were called, and it was all covered up. So we're at a loss as far as who all is involved other than who the children tell us. I started working on gathering all of the parents on Friday when I found out what had happened, not knowing that my daughter was one of the children that was locked into the room. I didn't know until Saturday morning that my daughter was one of the ones locked in the room. So I had already begun to gather everyone and try to advocate for all of the children before even knowing that one of my children was involved.
So the superintendent is out and out lying.
Yes.
And the media, was the local media contacted about any of this?
One of the parents chose to contact local media. We didn't want local media involved because we didn't want them at the school. One of the parents did contact local media, in which they spent a couple of days on school grounds recording our children in the background after the principal and the superintendent had promised that they wouldn't let the children go outside during recess if the reporters were there. So they were subjected to being on, you know, live films that are now blasted all over with our children in the background.
It's not enough to be tortured. Now let's embarrass them by putting them on television all over the place and showing the world your children's faces with a bunch of creeps running around. What is your plan now moving forward? I mean, I can't imagine what I would do. So what are you doing to combat this?
We have gathered together, us parents have. We're working pretty tightly to move forward and try and gather the rest of the community and the other parents. I'm now working with Lewis Ewing. He contacted me last night. I have Jim Walsh, the Washington State Representative. Jim Walsh is involved. We've contacted ESD 101, OSPI. My daughter is special needs, has an IEP. There were one or two other children in the room who also were special needs. Children were left alone. One little girl in there had an accident because she wasn't allowed a bathroom and was left to sit like that until her mother picked her up. These kinds of things cannot happen. If there was a child who actually did have COVID, they all had colds, little runny noses. They just come in from outside. But if one of the children did have COVID, they just exposed all of the other children who had just colds, or maybe didn't have any cold at all, just had a little runny nose because they just come in from outside recess. So the room was, there was no air circulation in that room. So it was just stagnant air. So I had my daughter tested right after I picked her up. So I know she came with a negative COVID test, but if she ends up with it as a result, we know where she got it.
Okay, so hold on a second. They didn't test these children. These kids were just presenting with colds.
Correct.
Your daughter was negative for COVID, and as a result of having a runny or drippy nose, your special needs daughter with an IEP was treated more horribly than some of our country's most heinous criminals. And yes, one child sat in their own excrement for a period of hours because they had a cold. Am I getting this right?
Yes. And actually, that one child just reported that she had a stuffy nose, I believe is what she said. She didn't have any cold symptoms at all. She wanted to go home and be with her mom. So she said that she had a cold symptom and was locked into the room thinking that she was going to get to go home. So she wasn't even sick.
What's the big picture here? What's really behind all of this, do you think?
Control, money, mandates. This is Inslee's responsibility, but it is really the school administration that is allowing for illegal mandates to be taking place, violating our children's rights, putting them in danger. None of this should have happened. They're still using the same isolation space. I have asked for them to confirm that they've made a new safety plan. They have not. It's actually been confirmed back to me by Ben Fernie, the superintendent, that the same safety plan is still in effect. They are investigating, he says. I don't know what's going to happen out of this from the school standpoint. That's why us parents are continuing to push forward to try and make changes, because this can't happen to our children anymore.
So Roxanne, out of one side of his mouth, the superintendent is telling you, no, this didn't happen. This is a lie. And out of the other side of his mouth, he's saying that the same safety protocol is taking place. I mean, they're just lying out in the right out in the wide open as if they don't care. Go ahead, do something. We don't care. That's right. We're caught. We're torturing kids. Doesn't matter.
If you go on to the district Facebook page, you can see, anyone can get on there and look at the district page and see that his first statement says that none of this happened, that the police were brought in, that everything was safe, that what we were saying on social media was not true. But then the next day, after he interviewed me over the phone, he actually made a new statement, which is also up on their Facebook page, that admits to the fact that they did not have supervision 100% of the time. So he does admit partially to the fact that what took place really took place, but he does try to underscore it as, you know, a mistake and not as serious as it really is.
What is this superintendent's name?
Ben Fernie.
We're going to put his contact information at stupeters.tv and in the description of the video, wherever this interview, on every platform where it's posted, because I think that people rightfully would like to express their feelings about this situation and get behind you. We are behind you. And I know that hundreds of millions of Americans and global citizens will view this and say that is absolutely absurd. No way to treat any innocent child because they have a cold. By the way, influenza B, far more deadly than this COVID plandemic. And we never masked anybody. We never locked anybody in any room. There is a lot more to this. We know that now. Roxanne Hill, God bless you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much. God bless you.
There's been a lot of rumors about forced vaccinations, and that might be a legitimate concern. Edward Zoll is here with us, joining us now. So with the military mandate coming into effect, is it the objective of the Biden regime to force vaccinate all of the military and then force vaccinate the rest of America?
Well, Stu, it's certainly starting to look that way. You don't run a drill if you're not planning to do what you're drilling about. Now, what I'm speaking about is there's a lawsuit that I've found here in Florida. It's out of the U.S. federal court, the Middle District of Florida. It was filed actually on the 10th of this month. That was brought by an unnamed Navy SEAL against President Biden. But that's not the most shocking part of this lawsuit. Now, it was clearly against the vaccine mandate. It was motivated by such, the persecution that many in the military are going through, which is going to force, as we reported here on the Stu Peters Show, approximately 370,000 soldiers out of the military onto the streets and hopefully into activism and conservative media. But it was a declaration in this lawsuit that caught my eye. It was done by an Air Force civilian nurse, claimed to be, made against under the threat of perjury, so she's putting her reputation on line for this. She's been serving for 17 years in this position, has done one tour of service in Iraq, a tour overseas. She's been a nurse for 14 years and in healthcare for over 30. So this is someone who's obviously been in this job for quite some time. Now, what she relayed through the lawsuit is that she was involved at the end of October in an active shooter drill. Her and other colleagues were involved in this, or were brought into this, told to participate. Now get this, the scenario was that the military had begun force inoculating, force vaccinating soldiers, and one of the soldiers who was put under this went postal, went crazy, and decided to come into the clinic and start shooting nurses and doctors. Why would they be running a drill like this? And especially in Florida. I imagine many Floridians, most Americans, would be completely outraged at this. But according to this nurse, that's exactly what took place. Now, the unnamed Air Force nurse, who can't name herself because Joe Biden's goons would go after her job and maybe her life, she said on October 21st, she was subjected, along with her colleagues, to an active shooter drill wherein the scenario was based upon an active shooter being an individual forced to take a COVID injection against their will. Now, they became violent and entered the clinic, shooting and killing many staff. Now, the Air Force nurse is probably in her 50s based on this description. She said in her 30 years of healthcare experience, she has never seen anything like this. The threats, coercion, and demonizing of patients and employees who declined to take the shot is disheartening, ethically wrong, and immoral. Now, she said that one of her supervisors at the time, as a civilian psychologist, said, "We don't need to give people any ideas." Oh boy, I wonder what idea they're trying to give. Both that the soldiers might decide one day to go mad if someone holds them down and sticks an experimental shot in their arm? Yeah, I'd imagine so, but the point here was what are they seeding in the minds of the soldiers and the employees? Now, they also said that this nurse was the only unvaccinated person in the clinic, so she feels isolated, but they know. Everyone's looking at her when they say the unvaccinated people are going to be more than just a threat because of COVID, but potentially because they could become violent. Now, this nurse, again, we pray for her, we stand with her, we share these stories because she can't. She won't do it publicly, but she will speak today through us. And she said that it's unconscionable for the base to hold an exercise that characterizes a person who is declining the shot as someone who's unhinged, mentally unstable, and violent due to the opposition of the COVID shot. Now, she called it the anti-vax active shooter drill. This may have been what the base called it too. She said it shows the tone from the top down that the unvaccinated should be viewed and treated with suspicion because they are a threat in more ways than one. Now, I'll tell you this, I wonder if those who espouse communist beliefs, those that are actively fighting against the Constitution, and maybe even during President Trump's presidency were advocating for his overthrow, wouldn't those be considered dangerous? Wouldn't those be considered unhinged? No, apparently in Joe Biden's America, it's this nurse, a person who's dedicated her entire life to service. She's the one that's crazy. No, no, you're not, ma'am. We stand with you. Now, she said in her testimony that since spring 2021, she's been given many training, specifically on diversity, equality, inclusion, but on extremism. They've made a point for this. She's not a soldier, but why is she being trained on this? She said the training is anti-Republican, anti-conservative, anti-Christian, and anti-white male. They're trying to gaslight, trying to indoctrinate the people who are taking care of you when you're sick, and specifically those involved with our soldiers. Now, this is something that she said in here that touched my heart. She said she's being forced to choose between her faith in God and her military service. But she quoted Matthew 4, verse 8 through 9. She said that she will not pick between her profession or financial ruin. She would not submit to something that's demonically driven. She said that Satan offered Jesus the world. And guess what Jesus did? He declined it. Amen. That's exactly what every government employee should do. That's what every parent should do. And you should know that you have your brothers and sisters in Christ standing with you and God Almighty above. We stand with you in Galatians 5:1. We will not be yoked into slavery. We're free through Christ. Reporting for the Stu Peters Show, I'm Edward Zoll.
Well, as you know, the communistic Biden regime says everybody's getting a shot. Everybody's getting the bioweapon, regardless of your immunity status or your age. None of that matters. We're going to inject a needle into every living and breathing organism. But a Fifth Circuit court judge says not so fast. The workplace mandate is, quote, fatally flawed, says this sane judge. Dr. Jane Ruby is here with more on that. This sounds like victory to me.
It sure does, Stu, and it's a great first step. I'm not a legal expert, but I am a legal observer, especially when it has to do with these jabs. So what happened was on Friday, a trial court halted OSHA's implementation. You know, it's clear that the Biden administration has weaponized the Occupational Safety and Health Advisory group and into this mandate. But the judge on Friday said, no way. And then the other exciting part was that the Fifth Circuit judge, Court of Appeals, overnight Friday night, reaffirmed that stay on that. And what was really fun about it was that there was a 22-page decision, and some of the quotes are really, really impressive. I wish we had thousands of judges who actually saw it in the truthful way that this judge did, because essentially what he was saying was that OSHA's responsibility is to protect people from workplace hazards, chemicals, substances that are used in factories, manufacturing processes, things like that. Not general danger from, you know, viruses and common cold. That's not in their purview. So some of the quotes that the judge said, as you indicated, my personal favorite is that the mandate and the execution of it, or the direction to execute it through OSHA, is fatally flawed on its own terms. The judge also mocked the status, the stated impetus, he said, for the purpose, the a quote, a purported, and then he put in quotes, emergency, that the entire globe is now endured for nearly 2 years, citing that OSHA itself took 2 months to respond initially. So it couldn't have been that much of an emergency.
Right.
Its promulgation through OSHA grossly exceeds the agency's statutory authority. He also said the mandate was a one size fits all, in his words, sledgehammer. Thought that was pretty impressive. And that the current danger, here's another big one, the current danger of COVID-19 is questionable. That was his wording again. So in summary, yeah, this is a huge start to kneecapping these workplace nightmares, destroying American, you know, businesses. And remember, this was directed at businesses of 100 employees or more. And the administration clearly said that after they got this one through, they were going to get a mandate in place for businesses less than 100 employees. So this is a perfect time. Look, hearing from a lot of people saying, well, this doesn't affect, you know, public workers or CMS. Well, not yet, but let's build on this. And I've got some interesting information from a judicial scholar who is a state Supreme Court judge. And I asked a few questions for interpretation. And he said to me, look, it covers everybody in the Fifth Circuit and around the country. That was a big question that people had. No question, this will ultimately get before the Supreme Court, in this judge's opinion, of the United States before the first week in January. It's only a precedent, he said, if it's not appealed and further reviewed. This is not going to be a precedent, this is not going to be a precedent, is the ultimate question going forward to the highest court. And I asked him how he was certain that it would be going to the Supreme Court and so quickly. And his response was, look, they took it up from the trial court to the appellate court in the Fifth Circuit within hours. It's the most compelling issue in connection with the vaccine policy. It's not going to stop there. So I hope that gives people some hope. And again, use this decision, use this stay on OSHA and the Biden administration, and hopefully it turns the tide a little bit.
So who does this specifically impact? You said the Fifth Circuit and around the country. So which one is it?
Yeah, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals reaffirmed the lower court's stay to halt this OSHA implementation of the Biden mandate. But this state Supreme Court justice translated for us that this covers everyone in the country who has a private business with over 100 employees.
Wonderful. So 2.4 billion people, is that what it is? 2.4 billion people have taken this thing already?
Yeah, 2.4 billion, it's estimated by a number of organizations. And in particular, what caught my eye, we're moving into the antibody dependent enhancement season, I fear. What caught my eye is that a physician who runs an ICU in a very large hospital system in Belgium just came out publicly and said that he could verify that 100% of his ICU patients are injected and they're showing pneumonia and COVID-like experiences. Look, antibody-dependent enhancement is another way to say pathogenic priming. In other words, priming up your immune system to react, you know, more aggressively. And the reason this is important is I think that they may use this as like the scare, you know, the COVID scare, you know, point two, because this is, and by the way, this pathogenic priming is only related to pretty much any mRNA technology for these bioweapon shots. And I want to ask, you know, why isn't Pfizer or Moderna, who are the primary purveyors of this particular mRNA bioweapon, why aren't they addressing the issue? Why aren't they coming out again? Why do we not have a press conference? Why do we not have a safety report or some sort of risk mitigation strategy that other companies are you know, obligated to do?
So speaking of press conferences, why is there nobody in the White House asking Jen Psaki about all of the people who have reportedly died from this thing? already? Why Absolutely. Is nobody asking the administration why they're not addressing the hospitalizations, the permanent disabilities, the miscarriages, spontaneous abortions, and deaths that have been caused by this bioweapon?
Absolutely right. Just to take a little bit of a closer look at this pathogenic priming, this is relating to people who have taken these jabs, Stu. When they're injected, they're later exposed to natural coronaviruses in the wild, what we see happening and what we expect is a full inflammatory response. What does that mean? It's something you've heard called cytokine storm. There are hundreds of thousands of immune, you know, components, cells. And cytokines themselves are transcription factors, which means they're signalers. They'll send out a signal, you know, they keep a homeostatic balance theoretically. And what they do is they ramp up an inflammatory response in response to an invasion or a problem. And then when it's time to dampen it down, they send out other types of cytokine signalers that say, okay, calm it down now. But in this particular situation, when people take these jabs, especially with the boosters, they are priming, they're over-priming their immune system to get more aggressive and focus on these synthetic spike proteins to the exclusion, I've said, of other organisms or invaders that the body might also be, you know, be wisely trying to prepare you for. And, you know, when these cytokine storms occur, you are at very high risk for either bleeding or blood clots. So this is another mechanism by which people are getting sick. The thing I fear, Stu, because people are gonna die in large numbers, they're gonna experience paralysis, organ failure, which will lead to their death, permanent neurological changes, difficulty speaking, maybe difficulty comprehending, cognitive changes. The problem is no one's going to be reporting it to VAERS because think about it. If it's in the next couple of months, it's going to be so far removed temporally from the time they got their shots that they're not going to be, they can't even make the connection now when somebody drops dead of, you know, a heart attack and myocarditis 2 weeks after they take the shot. How are they going to make that link connection, you know, during the winter? And, you know, remember, the Biden administration and the president, the resident Biden, has already signaled this is going to be a dark winter. It's going to be a really dark, you know, December, January, February. I want people to be aware that this could be coming, but I want you to keep in mind that what you're going to see is definitely going to be antibody-dependent enhancement. This is what happened to the animals in the preclinical studies for SARS-CoV-1, that the animal studies, within 2 to 3 weeks of being exposed to natural coronaviruses, flus, colds, in the wild, these animals all died within 2 weeks. So I think we're going to see something really awful happening, but people need to remember that this is pathogenic priming. This is not going to be, you know, SARS-CoV-2 lockdown scare, you know, 2.0. I mean, they could try to make it that. But we have to be on our guard.
That's exactly what they're going to try to make it. And I want to remind everybody, you were the first one months ago to come out here and talk about this pathogenic priming and this antibody dependent enhancement. You called it really early, just as you do a lot of times. I'd rather be right than early or right than first, but you seem to be both pretty consistently, and we appreciate you being all Thanks. Over this stuff. So when you're hearing about Marburg and whatever the next variant is going to be, and you're having people running for cover and ducking and diving and locking themselves down, trying to escape the dangerous and deadly viruses that are coming during this so-called dark winter that the dementia patient is telling us all about, this is all lies. This is all set up by a complicit media. This is part of the brainwashing operation. Remember, when you turn on any one of these channels, Newsmax and Fox included, and they go to commercial break, what do you see? Commercial after advertisement after message telling uh-huh. you to go and get shots and take this medicine and Viagra this and Pfizer sure. that. They are sellouts and shills for Big Pharma. They are butt sluts for Big Pharma. They want you. They're basically the paid whores. They're bringing the money back to Big Pharma. If you go away from these channels, guess what? They're not going to pay them to advertise there anymore, and we can participate in some reverse cancel culture. But Dr. Jane Ruby called it. Antibody-dependent enhancement is what you're going to see all winter long when these people are dying. Just ask yourself this. Just do an independent poll. Of all the people that you know that are injured or that are demonstrating some sort of a sickness, that are hospitalized, are they injected or are they not? And I bet you the majority of people that you know that are going to be sick and hospitalized and dead are going to be the injected ones. This is the pandemic of the vaccinated. Dr. Jane Ruby, thank you so much for being
Amen.
Here. Well, what do you know? Another headline that you might not appreciate too much. Your bank account not appreciating, depreciating. As a matter of fact, you lost 6% of your hard-earned money this year. Carlos Cortez joins us. That's the topic of today's Money Minute. 6%. I don't care if you're a multimillionaire or on a fixed income. 6% is a lot of money.
Yeah, I mean, those are the facts, dude. We got a dementia patient in the White House telling the feds, hey, keep on printing money, printing money. And it's escalating inflation at ungodly amounts. And yeah, with inflation over 5.5%, your money has literally lost in the bank. And you're being taxed for that, by the way. Secondly, at our website, regardless if Dementia Boy is in the office, our website, America First Retirement Plan, I've designed and founded this planning process to take care of our listeners too, so that you can be protected. AmericaFirstRetirementPlan.com.
AmericaFirstRetirementPlan.com. Get there, go there, find a solution. That's what we like to talk about here. Lots of things going on, but we like solutions. Speaking of solutions, if you like an ad-free experience solution, behind-the-scenes content solution, extended exclusive interview solutions, RedVoiceMedia.com/premium. $5 a month. RedVoiceMedia.com/premium. Until tomorrow at this time, here's what's up to it. Here's what's down to it. Here's to any way you can get to it. Here's to those that don't do it. May they be dragged to it, tied to it, or forced to it. And here's to us who do it, because we're the ones that's used to it. Fly low, avoid the radar. Remember, one day they're going to come for the car. And when they do, save the